is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 398. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by co-host extraordinaire, Mr. Nick Mayo.
Nick!
Nick to the first power. Nicole Shiro's not here today, but we miss her. We are listening to us where? You're listening to us on KOOP, Hornsby, Austin, 91.7 FM, streaming live on KOOP.org. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. On the show today, we have the Vortex Theater and their show, Perfect Robot. And Austin Theater Project will be here regaling us with title of show. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Paris, Hamburg, and, I don't know, Sicily. We'll be right back. Thank you for that able assist, Mr. Nick Mayo.
You're
Sicily.
Welcome. It's my pleasure.
I didn't have it readily at the top of my head,
it's
Sicily.
It's just right in my brain, Sicily. Yeah. I don't know why.
Well, you know, it's because of my sister, Sicily.
Or Miss Tyson.
Or Miss Tyson. Yes, exactly. Well, we are missing one of our Nicks.
We are sans Nick.
We are sans Nicks. We are Nick squared minus one.
I know. My voice
just goes...
To keep
it mathematic.
Nick. We miss her.
We do miss her, but she is very, very busy doing stuff.
Changing lives. One
making...
press release at a time.
One day at a time. Have you seen that new series?
Have not.
Okay, it's Rita Moreno's in it.
That's amazing.
So here's a question for you.
What's the
All right,
question?
So Rita Moreno was in West Side Story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was she in the movie or the original play?
She was in the No, she was in the play.
Wrong. She was in the movie.
She was in the movie. I knew it was...
Cheetah Rivera was in the play.
Cheetah Rivera was in the play.
I went through there. A friend of mine was saying, talking about the... And she says, and that woman from West Side Story. I said, Natalie Wood?
Well, that's that whole Cheetah Not Rita song I do it in my head. I sing it, and then I get it opposite. So I was very happy.
There you go, yeah.
My name is Cheetah Not Rita. And then I put it...
What's that song from? I don't even know that.
Forbidden
Broadway.
To say, is it Forbidden Broadway? Yeah. There you go. Well, let's introduce those folks that are here with us. And you just heard his voice. That was Mr. David Blackburn. Hi, David. Welcome back.
Hi, Lisa.
You're an honorary member. You've been a co-host, too.
I have been a co-host.
So we could be...
The lowest rated show you ever had.
I don't think so.
That's not true.
That is absolutely not true. I still get calls about it.
Daily.
I know. Complaints. And we have Sarah Denko. Welcome,
Hi.
Sarah.
Thank you.
And now we're going to do a mic test all at the same time because we're never sure whether this microphone works. That's and we're going to introduce Amelia Turner.
Hello.
And it works.
Yay.
You're the wiener.
And we have Audrey. Audrey, what's your last name?
Barrett.
Why is it not on my... There it is. Audrey Barrett.
Yeah.
And then we have over here, we have Emily Christine Smith.
Hello.
And one Craig McCurley.
Hello.
We have a full house today.
It is a full house.
So I don't know if you noticed, but that version of Hello Dolly was not sung in English.
Okay.
Comment allez-vous?
Comment?
That was sung in French.
Oh,
it's not. It's in the spirit of what I wanted to say here. So all of our interstitial music is going to be done, Broadway shows in other languages, to sort of in solidarity to immigrants everywhere.
What a beautiful extension of Ken Simpson's previous segment, which was so glorious.
Which is all Iranian. It was all music from all those places. I did tell him that all those songs have got to go back to that country.
You are a punk.
Just for 90 days, though.
Just for 90 days, yeah.
Exactly. We laugh so we don't cry.
We do laugh so that we don't cry. So I'm going to just say right here at the top of the show that the views expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not the views, not necessarily the views of Co-op. the board of directors or its employees, but solely those of the peoples that are speaking here. And by peoples, I mean me's and you's.
Me's and you's.
So
I think it's great, Lisa, that you made that decision in terms of our music going in.
Yeah. So, I mean, I couldn't find any Broadway shows from the affected countries, per se. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to make sure we knew, and we sort of tipped our hats to those in other countries who are welcome here, as far as I'm concerned. So there was a piece of, and we'll talk about theater in a second, but there was a Facebook post that I thought was funny. It's like, France called, they want their statue back. Just saying.
It's really been a very, very difficult week.
So we're going to talk more about that in a second, but I just want to switch gears for a little moment because it's something that we talked about at the very end of the show last week, literally the last 1 minute of it. And of course, everybody knows by now, but we lost Mary Tyler Moore. Mm-hmm. And we were not able to give her enough time here on the program because literally
it happened during,
we found out about it right before the show went off the air. But we lost her. What an incredible, incredible woman. I had the honor of meeting her.
I did as well.
Tell me.
I did as well. So I was incredibly active in Broadway Barks. And
sorry.
And I brought one of them with me. Adopt this wee little...
You know, I played Toto in The Wizard of Oz for 6 months.
So I met her through Bernadette Peters and Broadway Barks. Mary Tyler Moore was super active in the rescue community. And so we did a lot of work together on that.
Has anybody else had a brush with Mary Tyler Moore?
God, I wish.
I've only wished. No. Yeah.
Well, she was actually really good. I will tell this story. I was rehearsing. What's the show with David Merrick, The Elephant Man?
Oh, I love how you deformed your body. You should have, listeners. It was quite beautiful. Her Elephant Man.
I was, and people have heard me talk about that production and Juliet Mills and Max Caulfield, and the we were. Rehearsing on the 45th floor of the Minskoff building, and at the same time, Mary Tyler Moore was being put into Whose Life Is It Anyway, which she won a special Tony for, by the way. And it was, I think, the first time they gender bent a role, that we know of on Broadway. So Richard Dreyfuss played the original role, and they retooled it so that Mary Tyler Moore could play the lead role. So I was on the stage management team, and we were friends with the other stage management team. And on the day that they were moving out to move into the theater was a Saturday or a Sunday. And at the Minskoff, you go and you stand in the regular elevators don't work. You have to wait for the freight elevator, and you stand in the freight elevator for a long time till an operator can come and push the buttons for you. So I was one of the first ones in, and I was talking to Kathy, I forgot her last name, who was one of the stage managers of Whose Life Is It Anyway. And so I said, you know, at some point I said, so I guess MTM won't be gracing us with their presence anymore. And I got all MTM this and MTM that. And we renamed it Mary Goes to the Hospital. and then all of a sudden this woman in front of me turns around and says hello to everybody and says hello to Kathy. And it's, of course, Mary Tyler Moore. And she said, is there anybody else in this elevator I should know? And Kathy said, well, Mary, this is Lisa Sheps. She's the production assistant on Elephant Man. And she said, production assistant, huh? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, you'll be producing in just a few years, I'm sure.
Hysterical. I love that.
But she was great.
I love that.
I loved her.
Stuck on a freight with Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah. But she was very, very gracious in the few times that I saw her. But there's an interesting thing. Her obituary in the New York Times is 7 pages long. She did not get the room of the role of Danny Thomas's daughter in Make Room for Daddy. You know why? Because her nose was not big enough.
Oh my gosh. Love casting.
Isn't that great? But it was casting. A good thing. I mean, everything happened in a wonderful way for her. And of course, she meant so much. And she had her Broadway career. She was mostly television and movies and activism. She was very active in diabetes activism. But MTM produced a whole bunch of movies. Benefactors, Joe Egg, the Octet Bridge Club, Noises Off, the first production in New York they produced, Safe Sex. She was in Whose Lies and Is It Anyway? And she was also in Breakfast at Tiffany's, which never made it to New York, as you know. So,
pretty special talent, and someone that was not only changed everyone's lives through the TV, but her activism and super active in the Broadway community, like I said, her work with the rescue animals and the Broadway Barks was something that she gave a lot of her time, her energy to. So.
And very much like Carrie Fisher that we talked before, her roles transformed women.
Yes, very much.
Or at least her role. I don't know if Laura Petrie. I was watching a news program right after, and they were clearly reading the teleprompter and said her character on the Dick Van Dyke Show was a Laura Petrie.
Oh no,
she's a dish.
She's a dish.
Glad you thought of that.
Oh Lord.
Well, there was some interesting shows on that I wanted to talk about, and this is where we'll get a little bit of political again. There was a show. It wasn't really a show. It was more of a. It was done at Provincetown Playhouse. The university professors from the University of New York or New York University and the Rhode Island School of Design and the French Business School presented a show called Her Opponent. They took the three debates that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump had. They wrote all the stuff down and they replayed it, switching the roles. So the role of Donald Trump was played by a woman. The role of Hillary Clinton was played by a man, and how those same, they studied the mannerisms, they used the actual, and how those mannerisms and things affect you differently based on the gender of the person saying it, which I thought was very interesting.
That's very interesting. And as someone who, I watched the debates, it was the release of a Harry Potter film when I was 9, but I could see that very much. I could see that that's a really interesting exercise and something that would be great for us to see. I would love to see that.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, and they had been working on it for a while, but it's interesting when you, one of the things they say in this article, most of the people there had watched the debates assuming that Ms. Clinton couldn't lose. This time they're watching trying to figure out how Mr. Trump could have won. And it's just, it's really, really very interesting. And so there is a link on offstageonair.com, not only to this article in the New York Times, but also a video of the actual performance. The audio isn't great, but you can see a little bit of it.
Oh, I would love to see that. Mm-hmm. It's great.
It's interesting. I mean, it's somebody who, we're in a time where we're sort of fighting against gender roles and societal thinking about gender roles, but it really sort of plays into this when you see it, and everybody's different. Like she's her smiles that she gave when they were done by a man were, it sent a very different message. It's very, very interesting. All right, that's it.
Rip it up.
The other little political thing is the show by Wally Shawn. Now, this one they started working on long before Trump had even talked about being a candidate, and it's called Our Complacency is Dangerous. And I'll just read the very first line of this article. An autocratic leader has won the vote. He has charm, yes, and smarts of a kind, but also a cruel streak. Beatings are frequent, and assassination, foreign and domestic, has become commonplace. His cultural pronouncements have had a chilling effect on the arts, theater in particular. So this takes an artistic-centric view of what a society under somebody like that would be. And it just, it's happenstance in many ways that it happens right now. It's being done, oh God, where is it being done? It's being done in Toronto right now, and it's going to come here.
I'm glad that we're talking about this. This week I've had conversations with two playwrights, one local playwright and one playwright in New York. And the message of responsibility from both of them is palpable. Both of them saying over and over again, it's our time. It's right now more than anything. I can't do anything other than write. I'm writing. I can't not write about what's happening. And I love that. I love that we're getting to talk about that. And we always say, you know, it's such a wonderful community to be in. It's a painful time, but to know that our artists are, that our writers are writing is comforting. It brought me comfort this week to go like, oh, I'm so glad to imagine you writing because I need you to right now. I'm not a writer. I need you to. I need you to do this as part of our community. So it brought me great comfort.
Yeah, and they talk in this article about what's the responsibility of of theater in particular, and what would happen if theater went away, etc. But this is the article set up as an interview, and I want to tell you who's in this show. It's just an amazing list of who's who. But they talk about after George W. Bush was elected, we had a lot of plays and things like that because we had to really sort of talk about all this. After 9/11, that a lot of that went away. We sort of went to a little bit of fluff, a little guys and dolls time, because we needed just to be happy.
Entertained. And, like, yeah. Purely. Mm-hmm.
And now we're in a period where we really need to start talking about stuff, because if we're not talking about stuff, we as a nation are in trouble, and we as an artistic community have a responsibility to do that, I think.
I could not agree more. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah.
Come on, you're all looking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up.
I am too.
I mean, political turmoil often spawns some of the best art in all sorts of genres. In the 60s, it was the music scene. And, you know, so I think we're going to get some really, really creative, thought-provoking works out of these next 4 years.
Yeah, and I don't think... I said something earlier that I want to... I said, I'm not a writer, so I'm so happy that they're doing that. That's a passive role, and I want to say as actors and artists that I didn't mean it as a passive thing. That I'm glad that they're doing that, and I'm glad to be a part of it with them. So yeah. I didn't want to have it be a separate thing. Like, oh, writers go write, and I'll be here waiting. Well, that's ding-dongy. I'm happy that they're doing it, and we can collaborate together.
Well, and we do, and especially as more and more shows are done collaboratively, and are devised versus written. So that's really good. One of the things that this deals with is the is how we as a society have become that these mass killings and assassinations and stuff like that we go, oh, okay, and then we just move on as if it's become commonplace and we're used to it. And one of the things that Wally Shawn, oh, I gotta tell you who's in it. So Wallace Shawn wrote it. And does everybody know who Wallace Shawn is?
Inconceivable,
but he's a very serious and a Pulitzer Prize? I don't know if he's won the Pulitzer or not, but he's a very serious playwright. In this show are Matthew Broderick, Jill Eikenberry, John Epperson, Larry Pine, Claudia Scheer, Annapurna Serum, and Michael Tucker, and Wallace Shawn. So, I mean, it's an incredible cast. And this is this article is really an excerpt of interviews with them. And one of the things that Wallace Shawn said, I guess he prefers Wallace to Wally, but I don't know.
We should ask him.
But he's talking about that all the assassinations and things have become normal. And one of the things he said, in the case of Bin Laden, it was boasted about by apparently nice people. And that's true. So many people, when Bin Laden was killed, you know, like celebrated his death, and I didn't. I mean, I found it... I mean. Yeah, it was needed. It was something that was important to do. But to celebrate anybody's death, I think is wrong.
I agree. But and
I understand where it comes from. But I love this the sentiment of understanding. And I think we need to take the road of looking at the whole picture versus our narrow view of that picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
all. All right, so I think the political part of this is done, which is not true.
Sure. Well, it would be so disingenuous of us not. I mean, we couldn't stand up here and not.
Well, no, we're going to go a little bit more political, except on a different stuff. Remember when we talked about the production of Ragtime?
Yes, I'm desperate to know what happened.
Well, they are doing the show with the text as written, and I found this a very fascinating and wonderful way of how they came about this decision. So those people that aren't familiar, there's a production in Cherry Hill, New Jersey of Ragtime that the some African-American groups, local African-American groups, including the local NAACP, and the head of the school decided to take, to remove the N-word from the production. And a lot of people said, no, you can't do that with that because it's really culturally it's important to do it. It's not, you know, it's not glorifying the N-word. It's really using it as it did, and it's teaching lessons of that time. And so they really talked. They didn't, as they did with Rent here a few years ago at McCallum. I'm pointing in the wrong direction. Nobody talked to anybody. Everybody just sort of took to their ground. These people talked, and then when they finally made the decision, in the letter that the dean wrote, he said, one of the sentences says, "We do not deem any individual or group who voiced an opinion in the process as wrong." So they really took it. They took everybody's opinion and they decided to show it as written and have a whole curriculum, you know, for the month ahead of time in school to talk about the issues around race, the use of the word, and that time period. So I think it's awesome.
Amazing. And why not use it? If they chose that material as a teaching tool, and why not use the whole process as a teaching tool? That's great.
Okay. So let's see. On to more fun stuff. first of all, the there's a football game this Sunday.
Nicole. Yeah, there is.
So we have one football fan here.
Nicole, I hear her just like screaming and with glee and delight.
I was at Houston. I was in Houston over the weekend because we have some things happening. There's a whole event for 10 days prior to the Super Bowl around the Super Bowl, and we had a production there, so I was out there and I took a picture of me. They have these football players and all the different things where you can stand behind in your head. You become that football player. I took a picture of it, sent it to Nicole. She thought that was very funny. But anyway, there is a little Broadway connection this year.
Renee Elise Goldsberry.
Philippa Sue and Jasmine. I can't remember. What?
Safest Jones.
Yeah, you need to speak into the microphone.
Safest Jones.
Thank you. I couldn't remember her name, and I can't read my own writing. They're singing the opening. I don't know if they're singing...
something from Hamilton.
No. I think they're either singing God Save America, God Bless America, or...
God Save the Queen.
God Save the Queen. God, get us out of here. Something with God in it. But I'll tell you, we try not to talk about Hamilton because we're sort of in Hamilton overload. But I listened to the whole show yesterday, I think, and I followed along reading the lyrics, which I've never done before. And at the end, I was weeping real tears.
Yep.
As opposed to my fake ones.
Your crocodile tears.
It's a beautiful show.
I just love the image of you listening and reading along. That's such a familiar thing for me, and it's been a long time since I've done that. I remember just the books in my little young eyes could see those tiny words. And
it makes a huge difference.
It's a really great...
It makes a huge difference.
Great thing to do.
Let's see. We have a production of M. Butterfly we've talked about here before that Julie Taymor is directing. Which is going to come back to New York. I don't know when, because they don't have... They have Clive Owen is playing the male role, or the male-identified role. And the one that B.D. Wong played, they don't have cast yet. I'm hoping they talk to me about that. but she's directing... It's going to be interesting what her approach will be.
It will be interesting. She... not necessarily one of my favorite directors, but
really,
no, I don't. Yeah,
what haven't you liked? Say more about that,
Titus.
Oh my god, I love Titus. You didn't like Titus?
Yeah, she's just not my favorite. I have got to say, I like.
Excuse me, while I'm done. Okay.
Sorry about
you're
it.
You're not invited to my dinner party with Julie Taymor next week.
Well, all right.
Well, we'll have to. So the final thing I really want to talk about right now is there was an article. Called How to Act Drunk.
Why do we need to act?
Well, I think about this because I was at a show this week where there were two characters drunk on stage, and they were so bad. And they were. And I apologize if anybody recognizes who I'm talking about, but it's so bad. That's not fair. But they played drunk like you would see in a cartoon. Mm-hmm. So in reality, if you look at a drunk person, they're trying. And this guy, Richard Roxburgh, is really good.
A professional drunk.
Drunk. Well, he said he's Australian and he's an actor, so he's good at it. But he says seeing bad drunk acting is probably like watching an actor trying to squeeze out tears. It's kind of fingers on blackboard excruciating. And one of the things I thought was very interesting, when you are drunk, what you're trying to do is to appear not drunk. So you're going to exaggerate your addiction, really, rather than slur it, although some may come out slurred, and you're going to try to stand up straight. And then he said one thing. He said they're typically not like rolling around like they can't stand up, but they'll widen their stance because their center of gravity's changed, and you'll see them grab hold of a table with one hand or a chair back. And I went, oh my God, I've lived that. I know exactly what that
is. You were being watched.
So I find it an interesting thing, and I would encourage those people that are playing roles to really try to read this article, because he has some tips, like know why you're drinking. Mm-hmm. Know why the character is drinking. There's a reason. Go to the pub, watch other people. And then he talks about all those other things that we just talked about. His last one is try not to seem drunk.
Where was this article?
The New York Times.
That's hysterical. But that you we're can, having like a, the New York Times is doing that.
You can find it at a link at offstageonair.com.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So we're going to take a little break. And we're going to come back and talk to the folks from Vortex Theater about the perfect robot.
Perfect.
The perfect robot. I'll let you guys figure out what this song is. Oh, hold on. The CD player went to sleep, so now I need to let it wake up.
Oh, wake up, little CD player.
And now we'll listen to this. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo.
Nick.
Nick to the first. We're missing our Nicole Shiro. We need our Shiro. Shout out to Shiro.
Shout out to Shiro.
Bon anniversaire, even though it's not her birthday, but she says that all the time.
I need a Shiro.
I need a Shiro because it's kicking the time. She does.
I'm holding out to a Shiro. You know.
Yeah. I don't know the words, but she's good and she's...
She's great and she's small,
always on time.
Sort of.
Oh my God. We are just too good.
We love you, Nicole.
Okay. Let's talk to the folks at Vortex. I'm going to reintroduce Sarah Danko. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Lisa.
And Amelia Turner.
Hello.
Hold on. Speak up again.
Hello.
There you go.
Working.
Get a little close. There you go. And y'all are in a show at the Vortex called The Perfect Robot. And I do want to say that we were going to have Rudy Ramirez here, but when he heard that Nicole wasn't going to be here, he decided not.
He's like, I'm out. I will not do it.
So somebody tell us about this show.
Oh, wow. It's also kind of politically a timely piece for us right now. It's about, it's really a love story, I would say, ultimately, but it's about... man who has created a robot that is meant to be like the perfect, not soulmate, but mate. Yeah. Rather than like, you know, some sort of overdone fembot. She's meant to be like a real partner.
She's like a real person.
Like a real person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And am I wrong in assuming, do one of you, one or both of you play that person?
Amelia, I play the robot.
Sarah, I play the woman who... sort of inspired the robot.
Okay.
So, and we look a lot alike.
You do. I'm looking at you thinking like, sisters.
It's sisters.
You guys are, I mean, you're both beautiful, but you favor each other a lot. You look very similar.
The first time I saw Sarah on stage, I had kind of an out-of-body experience watching. It was like,
that happened to me too.
Is that me?
Why is that person so attractive?
Why am I strangely attracted to that person?
She and I should have lunch.
Okay, we're going to do a quick tangent here. Before we went on the air, we had Emily choose a number between 1 and 54, or 2 and 54, and she chose 53, but I just realized it only went up to 52. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to re-choose.
Okay, then 51.
You know what? That's exactly what I have here. So let's let's just see what you chose, shall we?
Hi, I'm David Lee Strasberg, creative director of the Lee Strasberg Theater and Film Institute, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
Okay, can you do it once more with feeling?
If you want.
Yes, I was talking to Lee Strasberg's son, and I told him to do it again with feeling.
Because, you know, when I was listening to him, I was like, oh, that's interesting, but he needs to get some love behind him. Well done, Lisa Sheps.
He needs to read a book on acting theory.
Right?
Only he could find one.
That's so funny.
So back to Perfect Robot at the Vortex. Is this a devised piece or was this written?
It's written. It's written by Sarah Saltwick.
Mm-hmm.
How long?
What an alliterative name!
I think they did a reading a few years ago, and
at
then
UT maybe.
I think so. And then our cast or most of our cast did a reading last August, and then since then. I guess it's kind of been in the works of the Vortex. And
how many people are in this cast?
Six
people. So tell a little bit about those characters.
Yep.
Ooh, Yeah, so so it starts with, it opens with the robot and her friend
Alan Turing, who is played by Joey Hood.
Oh,
And basically the robot has created a version of Alan Turing in her mind to kind of understand her existence and grapple with some issues that are more human than non.
Then
we meet Mollybot's creator, Diego, who
played
is
played by Jesus Faez.
Yes.
And he's wonderful, and he's kind of a mad scientist.
Mm-hmm. Mad sad scientist.
Mad sad scientist.
An MSS, we call them in the business.
MSS.
Yeah, that's what we call them in the business.
So what would audiences, what attracted you guys to this piece? What did you folks at the Vortex say, like, I feel like we need to tell this story because of blah. Talk a little bit about what's the draw. Why do we need to...
Oh, man, there's some big themes in
so
this play,
much.
And that's one of the
there's
things
so
I... We're moving into our third weekend, and, like, I still am having these revelations hearing Sarah's words of, like, where did this come from? But I think it's relevant right now. It's a lot about women's roles and, like, ideas about control and, you know, what does make a perfect woman, and how that is a totally ridiculous notion and unattainable. And
so does the robot then become sort of dystopian as it turns out? Or am I giving anything away?
Well, I wouldn't say dystopian. All the robot wants is the ocean and freedom
and to be waterproof. Yeah, those things don't necessarily go together.
No. But it's that struggle of wanting to have your own identity that is separate from anyone else's notion.
Interesting. Right. Well, now you guys are prepared to do a scene, are you not?
Yeah.
Can somebody set it up for us?
Okay, so this is a scene between Maddie, Diego's ex-girlfriend, and Mollybot, Diego's robot that he created. It looks very much like Maddie. And Maddie is a biologist, and she's somehow in the lab. She was brought to the lab to help crack the code, because in the beginning, Mollybot is there's a firewall placed in her to prevent her from showing her like full awesome
her desire to go to the ocean.
Yeah. She's busted Mollybot at this point.
Pretty much, yeah. She's like very dumbed down, like fancy Siri, somebody said, and I like that. So anyway.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is Sarah Danko and Amelia Turner doing a scene from Vortex production of Perfect Robot.
Please give a command. Maddie, you smell like inside now, but I know it is still you, just without salt. Maddie, give me a command, okay?
I don't need anything from you.
Maddie, you know Diego from before, long time ago.
What did you say?
You do not like it here. Not all the time needs plants, you say, but plants need water, sun, and soil, and more things too much to provide. Maddie, I play you song you like. Tell me if you like and how.
I hate this song. You're a failure.
I am Mollybot. Please give me a command.
Did he realize that? Is that why he left? Got frustrated, got scared, and gave up? Or were you always one day, one answer, one part away from perfection? Do you understand me?
I listen to you. Give me command. Okay, thank you. We do good work for everyone. Hooray, time to shine and snacks for you. You haven't had anything sweet today. I am not hungry. That is a joke.
Who designed your face?
Diego. You know Diego. You know him. George, help just a little. Sometimes he does okay work. Diego drew all his ideas so other people could see them.
Must have taken a lot of work.
I am his work. You are right. Good job, Maddie. Good job. I know Diego. I know him from February to February to February to February to February to February to August, plus the time after, but different. We work together.
Was he happy?
Access denied. Password protected. Dominoes.
Our first time? It was late and we were drinking. I was winning until I wasn't. I said it was unfair and knocked my tiles to the floor, and they made such a great noise, a clatter. You knocked yours down too. Clatter! Clatter! It's gotta be clatter! The end.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I so enjoyed that. Molly Bot is funny.
She's so funny.
I was really pleasantly surprised when we opened. Like, oh, she is funny.
She's funny.
It's hard for me to tell inside.
I love Molly Bot. I have very similar conversations with Alexa quite often.
Oh, I was just thinking. Oh, here's the deal. Two people's homes I've been in this week where they've talked to Alexa, and it freaks me out.
Really?
So you're sitting in the middle of a conversation, and the mother goes, "Alexa, what's the weather?" And it freaks me out.
It's really
You have one?
I have one, and it's on my desk. And when I get onto a conference call, if somebody calls me, I have to get her to shut up because I play music through her, and so I always say, "Alexa, off," or "Alexa, pause," and they go, "What? What? What do you say?"
That's so weird.
But I have two, and I have one sitting next to my television, and oftentimes my television will say something that it thinks it's its name, and it says, "I don't understand what you said."
Whoa.
Molly Bot, February to February to February to February to February. Okay, I tried to count. Is it 5.5 years?
It's 6.5. Yeah.
I tried to count. It sounds wonderful. Does Molly Bot become more human as we go on?
Yeah, we get to see her, especially inside her mind, having these conversations with Alan Turing, go through a growing process.
That's got to be sort of challenging as an actress to find those moments.
You know, it's been challenging in ways that I've never experienced. It's more mentally exhausting because the amount of focus, especially when she's in the broken down version, because I'm counting in between blinks and just totally frozen with this creepy smile. So,
and what is it like? I've had plenty of robotic scene partners, but what is it I mean, there's challenges involved with that, right? Of your scene partner being.
Yeah, and I think especially in the beginning when we first started rehearsing, because you're sitting there talking, it's hard to not acknowledge your scene partner as like a human, and you like the goal is to treat her like a robot, and like so it was challenging, and I wish we had more time together, but there is one scene that's pretty human between the two characters, and it's beautiful I think too, the play is so good that a lot of things that I thought would be challenging were actually not. Mm-hmm. Just because I think the words
it's just so well written.
It's so good. It's so well written.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, we are plumb out of time, but I know you've got a couple of things going on up front, which we really can't talk about in total, but I know you have some things happening on Thursday, and on Sunday you have the Robo Bowl, which I think is sort of fun. Where would folks go to get more information about that stuff?
You can go to vortexrep.org.
Great. And you are playing now. When do you close?
February 11th.
So plenty of time to go.
Next Saturday.
They did that like they were Molly Bot.
It's really cool.
Oh, no.
Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. Hopefully you'll have time to join us backstage amongst the dumpsters.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Sarah Danko and Amelia Turner. They are doing a Perfect Robot at the Vortex through February 11th. For more information, you may visit vortexrep.org. We will be right back.
Practically perfect.
All right, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Nick Squared -1.
Nick Squared.
We've been talking to Sarah Danko, Amelia Turner, David Blackburn, Emily Christian Smith, Craig McCurley, and don't tell me, Audrey Barrett, who's not in the normal place that I write things. That's why this is happening. So, do you have anything? Anybody have anything other than your own shows that you'd like to talk about that's happening locally here in Austin?
I do.
Go.
The Long Center College Audition Preparation Cabaret is this evening free of charge.
Oh.
7 o'clock. So you can see high schoolers from all over our greater Austin area who are part of a...
Is that part of Gatsmata?
It sort of. But they are doing a cabaret of their audition pieces. They're going off to their Unifieds on next week.
Oh, lovely.
To audition for colleges. So.
And can folks get information at thelongcenter.org?
They can get information at thelongcenter.org.
Awesome. Anybody else? Nope. David Blackburn, you want to say something?
No, you can't top that.
Okay, you can't top that. All right, well, let's just jump right into... Oh, I will say that Frontera Fest Short Fringe is still going on. Mm-hmm. And you can get more information there at hydetheaterpart.org. and they've got the Short Fringe, which is happening. I think there's one more week of the Short Fringe, and then there's Mi Casa es su Teatro, and then there is Bring Your Own Theater, Bring Your Own Venue places. So there's lots of stuff happening through Frontera Fest, our own local fringe festival. So let's just jump right into...
Today in theater history.
That's the word I was trying to
know. I feel like I'm like a Disney character today.
So
Tigger. I'm a Tigger quality.
Tigger. What's the... Their hands are made of rubber. Their tails are made of spring. In 1942, we have Of V We Sing. The V, of course, stands for victory in World War II. Co-produced by Alexander Cohen for the American Youth Theater. It had, amongst others, Betty Garrett, Phil Leeds, and Daniel Negrin. It ran 10 weeks, which was a long time back in 1942 for something to run. There you go. In 1967, The Deer Park, Norman Mailer's adaptation of his own novel, starred Rip Torn, Gene Leslie, and Marcia Mason. Pretty cool. It was, he directed it himself. Played 128 performances at Theatre de Lys. So as a bonus question, what is Theatre de Lys now called?
Theatre de la Reese.
Yes, please.
You are right.
Sorry, y'all. I've just been touched by an angel. It just happened.
It's the Lucille Lortel Theatre now. I know that because I worked there. Yes, I did. Cloud Nine was there.
Oh.
2002, there was a settlement between our favorite producer, Scott Rudin, and our favorite composer, Stephen Sondheim, over ownership of the musical Wise Guys.
I remember that.
Do you? It was then retitled to Bounce.
It
opened as Bounce at the Goodman Theater. And then it opened in New York in 2008 with yet a different name.
Yep.
Do you know what it was?
The Great Song and Dance.
Yes, it was called The Road Show.
The Great Song and Dance was what it was. Roadshow with Michael Cerveris.
Yes. In 2004, Isabella Rossellini starred with Richard Thomas in the world premiere of Terrence McNally's The Stendhal Syndrome.
Say it again.
The Stendhal Syndrome.
One more time.
I'm going to kill you. You are so dead. You are dead to me right now. Okay. Birthdays. Somebody named Clark Gable.
Aw.
Langston Hughes. Which there was somebody posted a lovely... Oh, Heath Riddles, formerly of Co-op Radio, posted a lovely Langston Hughes poem today that's very apropos to what's going on. Garrett Morris, 1937. Sherman Hemsley. Leo Burmster. I don't know who that is. Why did I... Oh, because I didn't have him say... I wasn't... Michael C. Hall.
Oh, cool. Well.
Locally, nothing today, but in 2 days on Friday, Laura Lund's birthday... Ben McLemore, Gabe Smith, who was in, who I directed in Kafka's I Can't Say the Word, and Justin Cox, which is similar to the word
I
can't say.
You can't say!
That was good. Totally, totally didn't have that planned at all. Okay, so that's it for today in theater history. We're going to take another break, and we're going to come back and talk. We're going to try to find out what the title is of that damn show. Okay. So what I am playing to take us out of this.
That was really nobody, well done.
Nobody likes my humor.
No, I do.
Oh, that was great.
And I forgot why I play this. It has something to do with one of the shows I did that we talked about, and it's from Silk Stockings. Here you go. Let's listen to it.
When the electromagnetic of the email meets the electromagnetic.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo.
Hello.
We are missing our Nicole Shiro, our lovely, lovely. And I will just call her what she calls all the other little folks. She's a peanut.
She's a peanut.
I miss my little peanut.
I miss her too.
Peanut, peanut.
I'm holding out for a Shiro. I still can't get off it.
I
want to
eat a peanut in the hutabaka. A peanut does this, and a peanut does that, and a peanut does that. I want a peanut.
Oh okay. My God!
We should be writing.
Just want to really watch
jingles.
Your diction on that one.
Hysterical.
Okay. We are going to be talking to our very dear friends at Austin Theater Project, who practically live here at Offstage and On the Air,
yeah.
Right?
Aww. ATP.
And I'm going to reintroduce everybody. First of all, David Blackburn, co-artistic director of Austin Theater Project, and not musically directing this show this time. No, you're musically directing. You're
I'm
just
not playing the show.
Okay, never mind. Forget I ever said anything.
It's very, very, very odd.
It's very confusing. We have Audrey Barrett, who's the director.
Yes.
And is playing the show.
Yes.
We have Kevin McCurley.
What was that, Lisa? Mm-hmm.
Did I call you Kevin McCurley? Craig McCurley. See, this is why I should be reading my paper and not going
by
memory.
Is your brother here?
Do you have a brother named Kevin?
I do not.
Okay.
No, but I'm calling you Kevin.
That would have been good. So he'll be Kevin to me. So it's got to be something, Craig. Last time you came here, I didn't recognize you.
You didn't know who I was, Lisa, last time I saw you.
You're transformative.
And Emily Christine Smith.
Yes.
Hi. Okay, so y'all are doing Title of Show, which is a musical, is it not?
It is.
Yes,
it is.
Somebody, Audrey, tell us about the show. What is it?
Great. So Title of Show is a musical about two guys writing a musical, about two guys writing a musical, which I believe is a quote from the show. It's about two guys named Jeff and Hunter, based on Hunter Bell and Jeff
Bowen.
Bowen, thank you, who wrote a musical for the New York Musical Theater Festival.
Which just closed a week and a half ago.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. No, it's a wonderful show, and it's very meta.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
This one is one I don't know.
Oh, really? That's
exciting.
I'm really, you've got to come see it.
It
you
was
will
during
die.
A pocket of time that I was not aware.
I find that surprising. Well, I love it because it mentions the show that I was in New York, so that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one?
Oh, Brother.
Oh, Brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's
say,
my...
We mentioned really a just, lot of shows.
There's
well,
about,
the
flops.
That song.
Yeah,
there's
the
about
flops.
75 references to other shows in that show.
It's definitely like a love song to American musical theater.
Though. Right, yeah. So it's actually interesting and how meta it is because they wrote it for the New York Musical Theater Festival. Mm-hmm. And it's the story of them writing it for the musical theater, American Musical
right.
Theater Festival.
Mm-hmm. Up the side of the mouth.
Yeah.
So having not seen it, I remember lots of buzz, and it's like Heidi Blinkenstaff,
yes.
Yep.
That whole crew. So there was tell audiences what other than the, you know, a musical about people writing a musical. What's the tone of the music? Like, is it contemporary music?
It's very contemporary.
Okay.
Maybe not. It's not, you know, Jason Robert Brown style, but it's definitely contemporary style and with a lot of nice little throwbacks to golden era moments as well.
Yeah, it's definitely that style of like, in a good way, but like a college cabaret, like you're watching U of M do like their YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. It's very like musical theater kids sitting around writing a show together, and
oh,
so
that's fun. There's joy, there's
and it sort of throws rock, back yes. to Merrily a little bit with the three writers as well, and it's fun. It's fun. So what do you play, Emily?
I play Susan, who is she works in an office and she's just friends with these people, and she sort of stops auditioning because she can't handle the insecurities, and she has so much stage fright.
Is she the one that sings a song about playing herself? She's in a show where she plays herself?
No, that is Heidi.
Never mind then.
She actually sings the Die Vampire Die
song,
which is like my anthem, which is funny because when I first heard this show, Die Vampire Die, you get to the end, and I would always just be like in tears.
Oh.
And it's not like a sad song. It's this uplifting, like super happy, but like when her friends come in and are supporting her, and just it's this wonderful love story to kind of the theater community taking care of each other and just supporting each other, and it's wonderful.
Can you explain what is meant by a vampire?
So a vampire, a person or thought or feeling that stands between you and your creative self-expression.
Oh, I got a lot of those.
Sounds like that's a line from the show.
It might be,
But you know, we had an actual vampire on the show last week.
Ooh.
And I saw said vampire.
Oh, you did.
I loved that.
Okay, we'll finish early enough that we can talk about that because I want to hear your feelings. Because you know, vampires don't have feelings. Kevin, what do you play?
Well, my name is Craig, and I play Hunter, who is based on Hunter Bell, the book writer of Title of Show, playing Hunter, the book writer of Title of Show,
playing Hunter, the book writer of Title and Show.
And when you write Title and Show, do you write it as it is written in the title with the brackets on
with
either side?
Brackets.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Okay,
I just want to make sure. Do you do that even in your normal writing? Like, hi, Mom, I'm in a show called Title of Show. Do you do the brackets?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right, good. I just want to make sure.
All lowercase.
Oh, I didn't realize it was all lowercase. Yeah. So I'm a failure because I think I capitalized.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What made you guys want to do this piece?
Oh, wow. I have known the show for 5 or 6 years and have been in love with it. And I was like, this is a real good show for us. Mm-hmm. This is a real good show. It's a real good show to start off the season. And it was just like a perfect storm. It was a great thing. The only challenge I really have is the number of emails I get to answer with. What's the title of the show? You seem to have left it out.
Oh, my.
And then I explain it. They go, oh, how clever. Can I have 2 tickets?
So you guys are not open yet, right?
We open on Friday.
You open on Friday. I'm excited to see the show because I enjoy the show.
You know, and it's, again, perfect storm. This is the perfect show for everything that everybody's going through emotionally and inwardly and outwardly. And it's just a good 2-hour pure escapism. It's one of the funniest shows I've ever seen.
And Audrey, you are the director.
I am.
Did I read correctly that this is your directorial debut?
You did.
Tell us about that, and how has this experience been for you, and what are some of the challenges and joys that you've experienced as you've gone through this process?
Oh, wow. I'm new to the Austin theater scene. I just graduated college.
We call it the ATS.
When did that start?
Now.
Where
did you go to school?
I went to Southwestern University, Georgetown, Texas.
We call it Southwestern University.
Oh, okay. Did that one right then. It's been a dream. I have some of the most talented actors I've ever met. That I get to just watch them every night. And the show is just riddled with inside jokes of the 4 original creators. And so the chemistry of these 4 actors has just brought it to life in a way that I never could have imagined. They are just constantly finding new things that they like about each other and making the show even funnier. So I just get to watch from the audience and tell them what it looks like and just let them play and do and try things. And it's just been a dream.
And you get to boss Kevin McCurley around.
Good old Kevin.
We would be remiss to not mention Andrew Cannata and Jennifer Coy Jennings, who are the other half of our cast.
We're happy to have Andrew Cannata back in the Austin area.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting being in a different place in the production of the show and observing these 4 people. Watching their friendships develop as they do in the show.
Oh, awesome.
It's been very parallel. It's been sweet. It's been really sweet.
It continues meta on top of meta.
Yeah. It has added to, I would say, exactly. It has just meta-ized the meta.
So, Audrey, you are not only directing it, but you're also playing it.
I sure am.
Are you playing the rehearsals?
Yeah.
Is that challenging for you as a director to do both at the same time?
I mean, it's like we put the piano in a different place every night so I can watch it from a different place, and I don't really watch my hands too often. I'm generally watching that.
You know what you could do is you could put it on a wagon and have them move it around during the show.
If we work that into choreography, that'd be great.
Oh, okay. That'd be adorable.
You want more choreography?
No, okay. I want.
So y'all open this weekend?
Yes.
Yeah. And how long do you play?
We play through the 18th.
Through February 18th?
Through February 18th.
At Trinity Theater?
At the Trinity Players
Correct.
Theater.
And where can folks go to get more information?
www.austintheaterproject.org with the proper spelling of theater.
Of course. You do not need to say that to our audience. But thank you so much for coming on the show. Hopefully all or some of you can stick around and join us among the dumpsters backstage.
Great. You enjoyed
thank
being
Thank you,
here.
Lisa.
Excellent. That was David Blackburn, Audrey Barrett, Emily Christine Smith, and Craig McCurley of Austin Theater Project's production of Title of Show at the Trinity Street Playhouse. For more information, austintheaterproject.org. And I should say it's playing through February 18th. And to give you a little taste of the show, here's one of my favorite short little ditties.
What if this show wanted Tony?
Well, there you go. That was the whole song.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's funny. You saw
Let the Right One In.
Let the Right One In.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Very, very much. I thought it was beautifully designed, beautifully designed.
It was beautifully designed.
I just love that Austin got the experience to see that, a different kind of storytelling. I was blown away. It stuck with me for days.
Now, do you see, after seeing it, do you see how, if you didn't know it was a vampire show, how that would add to the experience?
100%. 100%.
I just love that part of me. It's like when I guess it's gone now.
Yeah.
So there's some incredible effects of blood coming out of her nose and everything. Mm-hmm. When that started to happen, I was like, it was all sort of normal up to that point, other than she was a weird girl.
I was so into it. I went with a friend of mine who's a self-proclaimed non-theater enthusiast.
And Tracy Schultz saw it too, didn't you, Tracy?
Yep.
Did you like it?
I liked it. I thought it was really cool.
Excellent. Great. We love our Tracy Schultz, as we say. He's an honorary offstage on the air.
Great piece. I was glad that we got to see it.
Well, we got to run. We got to run backstage and talk to our folks. And we miss our Miss Nicole Shiro.
We love you, Nicole.
We know that she's going to be glued to the television on Sunday watching the Hojis play the Magojis.
Oh, I hope the Magojis win.
I think the Magojis will win. They're much better than the Hojis. And remember, you can hear Backstage at Offstage on the podcast. And if you're not listening to the podcast, I'm wondering why.
Yeah, why?
Right. You can get that by going to offstageonair.com and signing up to get it delivered to your mailbox. It's also available on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iHeartLisa, iHeartNick.
Nick and Nicole.
You looked like you wanted to say something.
Nope, didn't.
Didn't.
I didn't at all.
Okay, well, thank you. This is our first solo act together, you and me.
I think we did a really good job.
We did okay.
Yeah, we did.
We did okay.
You've got notes.
I'll meet you in the dressing room after the show. We will go out with our last piece of Fern music. And again, this is French because I like French. This is from Rose Marie, which was a musical back sometime played somewhere.
The Del Reese Theater.
The Del Reese Theater. No, you're thinking of the Dick Van Dyke Show. That had Rose Marie she was an actress. No, and I actually looked it up, and so I had information, but it left my skull. But let's just listen to it. All right, the curtain has just come down on I'm All By Myself, the musical. The story of a hapless young radio host who is abandoned by both of her co-hosts and is left to do it all on her own. But she is fortunate enough to have an ex-co-host here along with a great deal of other people.
Why, yes.
Zingy-dee-ding. That's my Zing-y-ding. Intro.
Thank you. It's good to be intro'd like that.
So here we are backstage, and we have, you're hearing the dulcet tones of David Blackburn.
Hello.
Hello. Craig McCurley.
Hi.
I love that. Amelia Turner.
Hello.
We have Audrey Barrett.
Hello.
And finally, last but not least, is Emily Christine Smith.
Hello.
Welcome to the backstage.
Ooh. Thank you.
This is where we will learn a little bit about you.
I need to empty that dumpster.
I know. Well, you get used to the smell. Just okay. Stick with it. It's the flies and the rats that you have a hard time with. Does anybody watch Portlandia?
Yes.
Did you see the last one with the rats?
No.
And they're jealous of a squirrel that gets all attention because we're really basically the same thing. And there's one rat makes a cotton tail that looks like a squirrel tail. People start. It's really funny. Okay. It was claymated or animated of some sort. It looked like claymation. So I need to just jump right in and ask Audrey Barrett, because she said she seems to defy convention and thinks somehow that Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark was good.
Wait, that's not what I said.
That's what I intimated. You wanted to talk about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, and here I'm going to give you your opportunity to talk about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Oh no, all I wanted to do was say Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark isn't your favorite Julie Taymor musical, but
we could talk about it because in our show we talk about having rants on shows you've never seen.
Yeah. And
I have opinions on things I haven't seen all the time.
So many rants.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking on this show. This actually predates Nicole, and Stuart was my original co-host. And we spent about 2 years talking about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark and the ramp up to its opening?
Ramp?
Question mark? But I did see it. I saw Spider-Man 2.0. So they talk about it pre-Julie Taymor and post-Julie mm-hmm. Taymor. Pre-Julie Taymor is 1.0 and post is 2.0. And 1.0 is where they had all the injuries and things like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe there were some injuries, but not a whole bunch during 2.0. But it was a pretty show during 2.0.
Yep.
We're lucky Nicole isn't here. She loved it. So she would be she's. I can hear her in my mind. She didn't love it. She loved it visually. She thought it was visually interesting. So, but what is your favorite musical then, Audrey?
Oh, ooh. Wow.
Other
which
than
is your favorite
show,
child?
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, my
was
God.
Was that an unfair question?
This is the most stressful moment of
all
my
right,
life.
All right, then forget it. Where did you come? Where were you born?
I was born in bustling city of San Angelo, Texas.
Were you?
I was.
Do you know, I talk about this on this program. When I moved here, the KUT sign, the legal ID was KUT Austin San Angelo. And
oh.
I thought San Angelo was like really close to Austin. And I got in my car one day and decided to go there. And
don't do that.
I never made it.
Did you get all the way there?
No,
good choice.
I never. So you grew up in San Angelo. Is there theater in San Angelo?
There's a surprisingly, good art scene in general in San Angelo.
Did you grow up there? Did you spend your entire childhood through high school there?
Through high school.
Okay. Were you?
My first time doing title of show was actually in a little theater in San Angelo.
So you've done this show before?
Yeah.
As a performer? Or as a director?
No, as a musician, twice.
Oh, as a musician, twice?
Yeah, twice.
So your title of show is My Fantastics. I've done it three times.
Oh, I've done it once.
Yeah. I know that David's done it at least once.
Three times.
I've done it. Okay. Wow. Anybody
that's
else?
A three-timer.
Fantastics. Okay, I actually haven't talked about this on the show for a long, long time, but I also talked about Our Town, which mm-hmm. everybody has done at least once.
And yep.
Nicole has never seen it.
You have. I haven't.
I've never done it.
Based in my home state.
Really?
New Hampshire.
That's right, New Hampshire. What was the name of the town? Grover's Corners.
Grover's Corners, Grover's based Corners, on Peterborough, New Hampshire.
Peterborough. I love Peterborough. So you're from New Hampshire?
Yep.
New Hampshire. Can New you Hampshire. Get that from here?
That's more Maine thing, but.
Oh, whatever.
You know.
I don't know.
Yeah, you can. It takes about 42 hours of straight driving. But
42 hours is not bad. I used to go between Houston and New York without stopping. Mm. 29 Oof. Hours.
Half Oof. Of that is Texas.
Half of that is Texas. Yep. I did go with a friend from Los Angeles to New York, and we stopped through Houston. And so between El Paso and Houston, Houston to Texarkana, a third of our trip
yep.
was in the state of Texas. It was amazing. So I want to get back to San Angelo. Were you in the drama? So I'm hearing music and theater.
Yes.
Okay. Did you study one over the other?
Well, I started taking piano lessons when I was six, and so it was just a constant.
Did you do minuet in G major?
Absolutely.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
And G minor, yeah.
G minor, whatever.
No, yeah. Both. Yeah.
Oh, both.
Yeah, and so I was a classical pianist all through school, and then I started doing theater alongside, and they fought at times, but and also it's very, very convenient being a theater artist who also can play piano to be able to play for auditions and things like
that.
Can
you sight read? Can you play for auditions?
Absolutely, yeah.
Lovely. That's quite a talent. I don't know. I actually don't know how you guys do that. I'm looking at David when I say that.
It's
amazing. I find that
reading.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's
but it's not only reading, but you're also, you can sit down and play the piano, but you also are working with an unknown artist
right.
sure.
that is performing with you, and you have to. It's your job to support that artist, not
yeah,
the other way around.
That just comes from experience.
Sure.
I'm giving you a compliment,
which is why
Thank
it still
you.
Stresses me out. Big
Does
time.
It?
Yeah,
I'm over the stress,
it,
but I'm
yeah.
a lot older too. So
you are a lot older.
I am.
I mean, a lot older than all of us here. I think.
You know, John Wilkes Booth was one of my voice students. If he had stuck to the singing, it would have been a different world.
There you go. He was. He sung all his way down from the balcony. So then you left San Angelo and came to Austin?
To Georgetown,
To Georgetown.
Yeah.
We'll call that Austin.
Austin adjacent.
Yeah, Austin adjacent. I like that school. Do they have a theater department there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
Yeah.
A bunch of alums from there are working in the theater scene now. Yeah. In the
Excellent. And
is,
when do
and Joy so Banks one of those?
Yeah.
Joy Banks.
Okay. He's in your show? No, in your show. Somebody's show. Didn't we just? Oh no, we heard Joey Hood, Joey Banks, Joey Hood. Same amount of letters in the last name. I'm just saying.
Right.
So great. So when did you graduate?
In 2015.
Oh, okay, so you're like an old timer now.
Yeah.
Oh. You're a baby. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, cool. So I want you to think about, because I'm going to ask you this later.
Okay.
What your favorite musical number number from a musical is, either to perform, to play, or direct. Don't answer now.
That's even more stressful. Okay.
That's either.
But I have time. Okay.
So Craig from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
What's been happening with you? You went on tour this summer.
This winter.
This winter. That's right. It was Christmas.
Summer in Australia.
Summer in Australia.
Yeah. November and December, we were on the road.
That was great. Did y'all get along while you were on the road together?
We did.
I'm assuming you roomed together as well.
We did.
Okay. And what was the show?
A Christmas Carol.
And did you play Scrooge?
I did not. I played Mr. Fezziwig and a couple other chunks of stuff here and there.
And I saw different posts on Facebook, you're saying where you went. But then we were talking earlier today before we went on the air, and you were playing it sounded like an auditorium of some sort. So it sounds like you had a varied amount of theatrical experiences on this tour.
Oh, we did. We played a rock club in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, that had no wings, no crossover, couldn't fit any of our set onto it. We stripped it down, did it in one bass costume, and just sort of changed some hats around. And then we played, you know, a 2,000 seat venue in Long Island and everything in between.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I find that I did that with when I toured the Joffrey. We played high school cafeterias and your Ohio theater, which is like a 5,000 seats.
Every day was you walked into a theater and you went,
"How can
all right,
make
what
this
can
work?
We do today?"
Did you find that just wonderfully challenging?
Yeah. And we had some of our more challenging venues right off the top of the tour as well. So by the time we were rolling into Colorado at the end, we'd just walk in and everyone knew what to do. And we were ready to go with 8 different versions of our show.
How did y'all travel?
Minivans and a box truck.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have to drive as well?
Yep.
Okay, so you were.
Oh, this was a straight up non equity tour. They were doing, whatever they could do.
Well, it's interesting when I took over. I was company and road manager for the Joffrey's third company. When I got the job, the dancers did everything. They laid the Marley and all this stuff. They did everything but drive because they were all 17 years old. but when I came on, I said, "No, you guys, you will dance and you'll dance only, and that's all you'll do." Because they worked almost 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was important to do that. I'm just going to tap my own shoulders.
We got there. We did load in. Actors did load in. Actors did strike. We all had our job assignments.
Wow. Well, good. It was a great good experience?
Yes.
What was your assignment? What was your tech assignment?
I was primarily on construction crew.
And Samantha?
Props.
Props.
We had a rear projection wall that was basically our entire set, that if anything went wrong with it, we had no set. So that was my project, and there was no stress in that.
Has anybody else done a similar kind of tour?
I did. Okay. I did a tour of The Most Happy Fella, and we did everything. We did a 2,300 seat venue in Muncie, Indiana at Ball State University.
Did you play Dallas?
No, we didn't play Dallas.
Too bad.
No, we did play. We didn't play Dallas. But then we also played the Hamilton Agricultural College in Podunky, Georgia, which had a stage about the size of this studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a
And
real
we should
trip.
Note we are in the smaller studio right now.
Yes, yes. But it was, the experience was great.
Yeah.
We were a bus and truck, so I got to live on a bus. I had 2 seats to myself.
What's all these faces for going on over here?
There is a line.
Faces, by the way, don't work on radio.
There is a line where we talk about knitting on the bus and truck.
Uh-huh.
And
finally someone stepped up.
I didn't get it. And every night I've just been going with it because the look on everyone else's face was like, they got the joke.
Oh.
So finally last night someone had the courage to be like, I don't understand this reference.
I now know I should have let Craig or David explain it because they have actual experience. I just gave them my Wikipedia knowledge of bus and truck.
Well, they don't do that many bus and trucks anymore.
No, they're very expensive.
Even the non-equity tours that go around are no longer bus and truck, typically.
Plane and charter bus.
Yep.
Well, no, they'll still travel in Buster Truck, but they stay in one place for at least
a lot
three or four
longer
days.
Sit down.
Well, no, like Mamma Mia that just came through, there were 2 days.
Yeah.
Here.
That would have been a luxury for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
My sister was in that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you get to see it?
Not this time.
No.
But I got to see it.
Well,
she's
this
been
is their
in
final
tour.
Years. So,
yeah.
Okay. Was she? Who's your sister?
Sarah Smith. She plays Rosie.
She was here with us. Or she wasn't here with us.
She did the
I interviewed her.
One, yeah.
So you didn't hear the recording?
I have not yet, but she
it's
told me
sister.
That I am a
Sarah
terrible
Smith
sister.
Was wonderful. You need to go back and listen to that because we had a great time. I sang to her.
Oh, that's sweet.
I sang to her because she was in Iowa. Can you guess what I sang?
Something from Music Man?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing halfway about the Iowa way. We treat you and we may not do it all. Oh, that's great. So, yeah, she was, we spoke to her 2 weeks ago, but she aired last week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she was charming. I love her.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
She's
awesome. Wonderful. Well, now I like you more than I did before. So did you, where did you grow up? I didn't like you before.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I did.
I grew up in a lot of places. Born in Chicago, grew up like child.
Right, we were
San
talking about Chicago beforehand.
I know.
But you wasn't really Chicago. You were in something park.
No, I can't like say that I'm from Chicago. Yeah. I would never say that because I'd be lying. But then I grew up in San Antonio and then we moved here when I was like 10. And we've been here ever since.
So you went to high school here?
I did. I went to John B. Connolly High School.
You went to John B. Connolly, who was in the car with President Kennedy when he got shot,
just
in case you didn't know. Did you do theater at Connolly High School?
I did.
Where is Connolly High School? I'm trying to think.
It is at Palmer Lane and I-35.
That's why I don't know about it. Okay.
Yep, it's up there.
Yeah, I believe I've seen shows there just recently. So did you do theater there?
I did,
And did you do the musical theater there?
I did. I started only doing musical theater.
What was the musical you did your senior year at Connolly High School?
Oh, do we have to talk about that?
Yeah. Sure do.
That's like drama. We were supposed to do Blood Brothers, and I was going to like get to play the mom. And then last second, we changed to High School Musical, and there wasn't a role for me, so they made me the music director, and then I played like the opera girl who comes in.
You dodged a bullet.
I still remember all the choreography,
love
though.
Brothers,
you do no. High School Musical.
No, by not having to be in it. Yeah.
High School Musical. You dodged a bullet. I'm not a big fan of Blood Brothers, but I like the music from it. You did it.
I did the show. Yeah. I didn't know it when I did it. So
yeah, you did it last year, last season, season four.
No. This is about seven years ago, and it was through
Austin
Trinity.
Theater Project. Oh,
no,
okay.
Austin,
I was about
we
to
weren't
say,
born
it was
yet.
At Trinity, wasn't
oh,
it?
Oh, that's
Trinity.
Right. Was that 6 years ago? Wow.
Yeah, seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
It does. So when did you graduate high school?
I graduated high school in 2007.
2007. Okay. I saw last year as part of my job as an adjudicator for the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards, I saw two productions of High School Musical, and I'm glad you're not part of either
that
of them.
That didn't exist when I was in high school here. We didn't have
But wait, you
like
just
that.
Said Gatsman you did High School
didn't.
Musical.
No.
Gatsman.
Gatsman.
Oh, Gatsman. No, yeah. We're just in our third year.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So then what did you do in your junior year?
Junior year. Snoopy, which is the lesser known sequel of Your Good Man Charlie Brown.
We play things from Snoopy quite often here because I'm a big Charlie Brown fan. So, and I get to choose the music.
I still have a giant, like, 6x6 foam painting of Lucy that was part of our set.
Where did you play Lucy?
I did.
Oh, that's the role to play.
Yeah. So it's still in storage in New York right now because I couldn't get it out of my apartment. So.
Okay. Well, that is cool. So we're now down to, and I need my glasses to Amelia. Of course, what is her name?
It's not Angela.
It's not Angela, but you could. I don't know. You might consider changing it. What? Where did you grow up, and where did you come to your love of theater?
Oh, I grew up in Shreveport, Louisiana.
I've heard of that place.
Oh my! Family's from Golden Meadow, Grand Isle, so I'm hardcore Cajun. But I started doing theater when I was 10 years old, and fell madly in love with it. It just made sense to me. Did it through high school. I was working at Centenary College all through high school doing tech.
What college?
Centenary College. It's like a it's our liberal arts college in Shreveport.
Okay, I love it.
But they had a great tech theater program, and so I started just.
You did tech?
Yeah, I did tech, and I was kind of split between like going into college. I got a BA from College of Santa Fe in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Well, I want to hear. Let's go back to your tech experience. What aspect of tech were you looking at?
I mean, when I was in high school, I was just doing anything I could do because mm-hmm. I wanted to learn as much as I could. I did a lot of set design stuff. I also did a lot of painting growing up and throughout high school. So a lot of prop design, that kind of thing.
That is so important. I talk about it all, ad nauseum here on the program, and it's so important for performers to understand and be educated mm-hmm. in the technical workings of a theater mm-hmm. production, because then you have a really good understanding. I had an actor he was in my production of The Fantastics. He played the Indian. He said that he had no need to know. He refused to learn anything about what was going on. And I was the stage manager of the show, and I said, you know, you're talking to the wrong person. So how did you switch? You switched to performing.
I was performing all the way along. When I got to college, it became kind of a point of contention with my advisors and myself.
Did y'all get fisticuffs? Did you actually get physical with them?
Yeah.
Come on,
yeah. There
was
a throwdown.
Yeah.
No,
that's what I would do.
But it was this thing of like, well, why can't I do both? And then as I got older, I started to understand, wearing all these hats doesn't really work long term. It's counterproductive after a while. So I really started moving into doing more performance and a lot of physical acting, physical movement stuff. I was a professional mime for a while.
Except you did
she's
it well.
Miming right now.
which is great for radio.
It is great for radio. I do it quite often.
So, yeah, I kind of decided to mainly focus on performing. I still do... I still do makeup for shows. I'll do special effects stuff every now and then.
So you're sitting next to four people that are musically inclined. Are you musically inclined?
I dabble. I've not ever been a big musical theater person.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it. I can sing, kind of. I can play a little bit of piano, kind of. So it's more of a dabbling thing for me.
So who here? We know you're not a triple threat, but is anybody here a triple threat?
No.
You've seen me dance, no? Lisa.
Oh, I'm being pointed at, and that's false.
Why would you point at her, Audrey?
Because I've been watching her. Be incredible.
Have you taken dance class?
Every night.
Yes. Yeah. I took
all of them.
Dance classes.
Ballet, tap, jazz.
Yep. Yep. I failed tap, y'all.
Failed. I got an A in tap in college.
I never went.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a triple threat, but I can sing, I can play the piano, and I can cook.
Oh, there you go. That works. That worked. That works for me. Because then you could cook me dinner and then sing for me while you accompany yourself while I eat.
And I watch.
That's my ideal husband right there.
Exactly. That's my husband, too. Well, that's awesome. So who did I give a job to? Audrey, I gave you a job. Did you come up with that job?
Okay. So I crowdsourced a little bit. I texted my group chat because I'm always talking about theater. I was something will come to mind. And my inbox is now just full of people texting me in all caps the names of the songs from Cats because they know that I can't stand.
If that was your answer, I was going to be so mad.
They just so disappointed. So I got no help. But I think I'm going to go with the song that never fails to make me feel warm and fuzzy and pumped up and motivated. Purpose from Avenue Q.
Oh. Wait a second. Did y'all hear that?
Wait.
Yeah, it's playing right now.
How did you do that?
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing.
You
Thank
know,
you.
Sometimes I think Lisa. You're just psychic.
Well, thank you guys for joining us back here amongst the dumpsters. We'll just say goodbye while we listen to Purpose from Avenue Q.
All right.
See you guys.
Bye. Thank you, Lisa.
Don't want to wait. Got to make sure that my life will be great. Gotta find my purpose before it's too late.